With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I wanted to do something a little more, I guess, hands-on. You know, I was kind of still, you know, hardcore, you know, military tough guy. So I said, hey, let me be a fugitive recovery agent, you know, a bounty hunter.
A bounty hunter.
Yes. My goodness, man. And I tell you that I earned every dollar doing that, man. That's some of the most dangerous work. And especially in New York City, you know, because that's where it's New York City, New Jersey and Pennsylvania was my jurisdiction. You know, so I would be going out and really getting into a lot of hairy situations, but we always got our guys.
Okay, so this is interesting. So you know how in the reality TV world you see a bounty hunter, is it like that? Or I know there was a movie that came out a few years ago.
It's funny because you know you're supposed to say, oh no, but it really is kind of like that. You know, it's of course it's, you know, certain rules and regulations you have to follow, but the thing about it is bounty hunters, like, we don't need warrants to go in your house and grab you, you know. So like a lot of the times we would just be surprising these guys, and it's like real life cowboys, you know. It's super dangerous. People try to shoot at you, people try to, like, we ran into a crack house one time, and we had like these like meth heads or whatever, like, throwing needles at us, you know. Yeah. Like when we're trying to grab these guys. So it was just like, you know, it's just like kind of how you see on movies, like TV kind of, you know, softens it up a little bit, but it's, you know, it really is the real deal. It's not for the faint-hearted.
How you dare? Those were the words of Vincent Williams, and as you can hear, he's lived a very interesting life. He also happens to be one of the most talented filmmakers that I know, and in the show notes, you're going to see the short film that he made using me as his muse to talk about failure. So I hope you check that out and you check the rest of his work. But we dive into how he became a filmmaker, what his military background taught him, how he learned how to connect across cultures, and why he believes that telling stories is the best way to sort of make an impact in today's world. So I hope you enjoy the episode. I hope your creative juices get flowing, and I hope you really connect with him. He's a really talented filmmaker on the rise. And if you have any projects that you're looking to come to life in a visual element, I would definitely recommend him. So check him out and enjoy the episode.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of As Told by Nomads. And today's guest is Vincent Williams. He is an independent film producer who has a very interesting background. We're going to talk about his life as a veteran, as a detective, as well as what he now does in the industry. I'm very curious to hear about how he applied all the skills that he learned in his youth to now tell stories of impact in today's world. Welcome to the show.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for having me, man. It's great. I'm really excited. Thank you.
Yeah, the pleasure is mine. So I always do this with all my guests. I always like to go back to the early days. Did you know as a kid that you were going to be a filmmaker?
You know, I would say yes and no, because like as a kid, you know, like when I was, I don't know, 7, 8, 9, 10, like my parents got me a camera. So like I would always be filming certain things, like little skateboard videos with my sister or little things I would put together. So I was always fascinated in like what a camera can do and like the power of shooting something and then looking at it later, you know. So I didn't really know I was going to be a filmmaker, but I just loved doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then even though you got that gift as an early age, you found yourself where you went through school, and then did you enroll into the military right after?
Yeah. I was in high school, and I graduated high school in 2008. And from then I went right into the military, 18 years old, you know, military police, you know, so I was like, I was 18 year old, like an 18 year old cop, you know, for the most part in the military, you know, wow. you know, pulling people over, you know, doing searches and, you know, all these, you know, crazy things. And, So that's where I got into, you know, law enforcement, and really didn't do too much in any kind of media because, you know, my dad was a cop and, you know, I kind of really gravitated towards, you know, law enforcement because it really interested me. So that's where I went, you know, just right out of high school and started that career.
So I've heard about, you know, military, Army, Navy, Air Force, but I don't think I had heard about military cop until we met. So what does a military cop do? Because I'm just curious.
Yeah, well, military police is the actual term, is MP, and that's with the Army. And basically they have two sides, is garrison and combat, and you do both. So when you're stateside, I live in Fort Lewis, that's in Washington. You know, we would do patrols, you know, we would do things just like you see how regular cops do, but we would just patrol on the military installation. So that's writing mm-hmm. tickets, you know, DVs and everything. And then we would also train for Afghanistan. So then we would do like 6 months, you know, police training and then 6 months, you know, training for combat. And that's when we go, you know, downrange to a combat zone and do our military tactics there, like, you know, village raids and, you know, close protection and all that and all that. So it's cop work and like hardcore military work, you know, mixed together.
That's fascinating to me. I imagine your work took you to basically different parts of the world, right?
You
traveled a lot. What countries?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, Kuwait, Afghanistan, of course, Korea, Iceland, Kazakhstan. Yeah, just, you know, crazy. You know, a lot of places. Meet a lot of interesting people, you know, great people, you know. So and at a young age, you know, you do that so young, you travel all over. It's, you know, you find a lot of fun things to get into, you know.
Yeah, and the reason I'm asking is because a lot of the listeners, they do identify with exactly what you said. Maybe they were Army brats or diplomatic kids or missionary kids, and they found themselves learning about different cultures at a, you know, different age, but they reacted differently. So I'm curious as to what your reaction was when you ran into all these different cultures or, you know, like different ways of doing you know, things or traditions and ideas. How did that impact your life?
Right. Well, the thing is, like, different with the Army brat, like, I was actually, like, I had to be professional there. I was like, I was a cop there and then, you know, being military there. So I see it differently than, like, the normal person that would be visiting, because I go there, I'm under specific orders. I have to do a certain thing at a certain time. You know, I have to conduct myself a certain way. You know, we couldn't, like, party there. You couldn't do anything. Everything is just so in-house and so strict, and especially being military police, a lot of it was conducting. What I did downrange was I did like a lot of personal protection, like, so the high-ranking officials, like, I would be like kind of like their bodyguards, like they would pull certain cops to do that, and so that's what I would do. So I would be walking around and I'd be protecting whoever, and, you know, being in those different countries, you know, you have to be like, you know, professional hardcore military, like, all the time. You know, So going there and adapting, you have to know, like, how certain cultures are and how to be respectful and, you know, not show the bottom of your feet in some places and, you know, custom courtesy, you know, for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah. The cultural nuances.
Yeah.
And then when you came back, how long did you spend in the military?
I did 6 years. My last tour was in Korea and I got out in 2013. And I did 2008 to 2013 and did that whole, you know, that whole thing from 18 years old.
Wow. No, well, I definitely want to thank you for your service. That's, you know, that's incredible.
It.
Thank you. No, I appreciate that.
Yes.
When you decide to come back, this is where you decide to figure out if you wanted to sort of stay in law enforcement or transition out of that.
Right. Yeah. When I got out, I didn't really want to be a police officer. You know, I could have gotten, you know, a cop job coming with the military police credentials. You know, I probably could have been a cop anywhere, but I really didn't, you know, I wasn't really feeling the whole, you know, cop thing. So I wanted to do something a little more, I guess, hands-on. You know, I was kind of still, you know, hardcore, you know, military tough guy. So I said, hey, let me be a fugitive recovery agent, you know, a bounty hunter.
Hunter.
Yes. My goodness, man. And I tell you that I earned every dollar doing that, man. That's some of the most dangerous work, and especially in New York City, you know, because that's where it's New York City, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania was my jurisdiction. You know, so I would be going out and really getting into a lot of hairy situations, but we always got our guys, you know.
Okay, so this is interesting. So you know how in the reality TV world you see a bounty hunter? Is it like that, or I know there was a movie that came out a few years ago.
It's funny because you know you're supposed to say, "Oh no," but it really is kind of like that. You know, it's of course it's certain rules and regulations you have to follow, but the thing about it is bounty hunters, like, we don't need warrants to go in your house and grab you. You know, so like a lot of the times we would just be surprising these guys, and it's like real life cowboys. You know, it's super dangerous. People try to shoot at you. People try to, like, we ran into a crack house one time, and we had like these like meth heads or whatever, like throwing needles at us. You know, yeah. Like when we're trying to grab these guys. So it was just like, you know, it's just like kind of how you see on movies, like TV kind of, you know, softens it up a little bit, but it really is the real deal. It's not for the faint-hearted.
I was gonna say it's not for the faint of heart.
You have to know how to use your hands, because you don't want to be shooting everybody. You want to tase everybody. So like, you have to know how to fight. You know, yeah. Like, you have to know how to really, you know, really get in there.
Do you remember what your craziest case was in the bounty hunting world?
You know, it's so many of them. I can tell you one of them, but like, I don't know which one's the craziest. We had it was a transgender male that was a female, right? And I can't say the person's name, but they're locked away for the rest of their life, right? And we've been looking for this individual for, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, and we know we had pictures of him, and we knew what he looked like as a male, but we didn't know what he looked like as a female, right? Mm-hmm. So we're kind of just going around asking people, hey, what's going on? We ended up finding this person. It was actually a prostitute that we found in Washington Heights. I don't know if you know the area, but we found him in Washington Heights. And takes off running. We find out this guy is like a track star. You know, we have all our gear on, so we're running, chasing this guy. I actually ended up catching him, caught him, and I'm fighting this guy. And it's so crazy because it's like a female, but he's like super strong, you know? Like, super strong. So I'm like wrestling this guy and, you know, throwing blows, and, you know, everything just, you know, goes south real fast. And we ended up getting him. And then we take him to Rikers, because every person that we get, we take him to Rikers Island, you know, that's the jail. And then we take him to processing, and it's just like how you see, like, in these movies, like when we're in line, like all the guys that are like in the jail cell watching us bring this individual up are like whistling and, you know, like doing all these things and howling, like person has like a bloody nose and everything, bloody face, and everything is blood all over the place. So it's just like those kind of situations, you know, like we have to get them because they violated, you know, their bail. You know, whether they didn't show up to a court hearing or what have you. But that would be, you know, one of the many situations, you know, that we deal with, is, you know, fighting with these guys, you know.
Yeah. No. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Now, yeah. I can imagine all these type of experiences influence what you think of as a filmmaker. Maybe I'm wrong, but I can imagine that it sort of plays a role into how you see the world and you interpret things through the lens of the camera.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, you pull inspiration from everywhere, right? And definitely, you know, my past, you know, I use a lot of different, you know, tactics, even in the production side, you know, how I want to situate, organize shoots, you know, to film what I need.
And the reason I'm always fascinated by this, but the background, the mechanics of production as well as creation, so especially with someone with a life as interesting as yours, you know, you're a military police, you're a bounty hunter, and then you harken back to the time when you got your first camera as a kid, and you're like, maybe I should, you know, try producing films and making films of my own. How does one make that leap? Because there are many people that have, you know, those thoughts in their head, but they don't make the leap the way you did.
Right. Yeah, you know, and that's a good question, because it wasn't something that I just said, let me just do it. I kind of accidentally fell into like doing this like professionally, like real deal. I made, you know, just a quick brief. I made my sister's been married for a year and some change, and her fiance at the time proposed to her, right, at her school. My sister's a school teacher. He went to her job and then proposed to her, and I filmed it, right? I filmed it, put it on YouTube, got like 20,000 views or something, and I was able to see how I was able to like draw people's emotion, make people cry, do a little, you know, and really capture that moment and really like hijack people's emotions. And I saw that and I said, wow, you know, that's really powerful. The film was really powerful. Let me try to do something else. And I tested it out with another film and I you know, motivational type. And then I just saw, wow, maybe I should really like try to do this for real, because it brought me so much joy, it brought me so much satisfaction to see that I'm able, you know, to captivate the audience in that kind of way. And then it just went from there.
So basically something that was, it was based, someone just saying, hey, can you do this? It turned into this viral video, and the viral video allowed you to really see, wow, maybe I could develop something on that.
Yeah.
And I could. Then, but in today's digital age where you have a lot of filmmakers, you have a lot of YouTubers, you have a lot of videographers, everybody's sort of doing stuff with their own cameras. They're a one woman, a one man troupe. How do you then separate yourself and decide what type of stories you want to tell so that yours is uniquely Vincent Williams?
Right. Well, I really just have to like focus on what I believe in my heart that I want to do. Because, you know, if I believe that, you know, I want to make this kind of film, like whether I research and if it's done or not, like if I do it and put it out, you know, I'm going to feel good about how it looks. And then the way when I put it out, you know, it'll really speak for itself for the most part. You know, to do my thing is I'm independent, you know, I'm very independent. So like, I don't have like a big, like, you know, Lionsgate guys, you know, pushing the content, you know, pushing, you know, marketing. Like I do everything like myself. So I like to brand, you know, the independence, you know, along with the, you know, production. So kind of what would make it unique is that, you know, I'm the drone operator, you know, I'm the producer, you know, I'm the editor, you know, I do everything like a one-stop shop, you know, unless I need to, you know, get a film crew, you know, for some shoots. But, you know, just being able to, you know, put my touch on it, my spin, you know, the way I want to color it, you know, the way I want to format it, you know, we kind of make it unique, you know, in that way, especially the content as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you highlighted the distinction between an independent producer and a studio backed producer. So what we see in the movies, whether it's, you know, it's a blockbuster film or any of those type of things, there's always a distinction, especially right around the Oscar time, which we're in right now. And you see that the indie films sometimes are the ones that are now getting, you know, recognition because not many people saw them. And the studio backed films are the ones that have a lot of the budgeted items. So the, you know, the drones and all these cost of productions are usually financed by, I guess, sponsors and people that have that. Is it very expensive then to be a filmmaker in today's world if you don't have studio?
Yeah, you know, it's two answers to that question, yes and no. And yes, because you're going to need equipment. You know, the film industry is one of the most expensive industries. You know, you're going to need equipment. You're going to need marketing, you know, to have a good project, you know, to really have a full good project. You're going to need it, you know, whether you finance it yourself, whether you find funding. But then again, like you don't, because really you just need a story. You know, you need a good story. You put it out there and you shoot it. And, you know, on a zero budget, you know, short, you know, a small budget. And if the story's good, you know, it'll really do itself, you know, and there's not much you have to put behind it. So, like I said, it really depends on which way you look at it and which way you want to look at it.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about, obstacles? Have you come across any obstacles in the filmmaking world? I'm just curious as to how you dealt with them.
Oh, yes. There's copyright laws where you try to use music for certain, you know, projects, and, you know, you'll get hit with the copyright and have to take it down, switch it up. I've learned, you know, around that to, you know, you buy licensed music or you buy music and license it. You know, film locations, you know, there's always, you know, things that come up. But I mean, you know, part of my military background too is identifying a problem and fixing it. You know, so, you know, if something comes up where we, you know, we can't get a permit in time to shoot at a certain location, you know, we'll figure out, well, let's shoot here, or I have a friend that has access here, so let's do this instead, and we can simulate, or use a green screen. You know, green screen is so magical. I've learned so much how to use a green screen to simulate, you know, we're somewhere where we're not. We're in my studio, but we're, you know, standing in front of a green screen. It looks like we're, you know, somewhere, I don't know, like standing in a city or something, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's just identifying a problem, you know, and really just and tackling it.
Well, so what's the goal for you? What's the end goal? What do you want to be known for?
Man, I have so many. I have a reality show that I'm working on. I have a few docus that I have coming out soon. You know, my biggest thing is like film, like making film, making reality TV. You know, I'm not like a video company that does, like, you know, little short videos, because there's guys for that. You know, like I try to, you know, really, you know, iron it behind, you know, like an actual, you know, filmmaking company. So, you know, I'm definitely gonna be putting some films on Amazon, you know, try to get into some film festivals this year. You know, last year was kind of, you know, I did a lot of films and learned as I was making them, and made some beautiful projects, you know, but this year we're going to really start scaling up and really, you know, go get into festivals and selling a lot of them. And so I guess the end one would just be, you know, getting stuff in the theaters, you know, pushing them out, having premieres, you know, red carpet events.
Right. So there's, on one end, there's the theater element, and the other end is the reality TV. So,
right.
Yeah. And those are two different worlds.
They are. Oh, man.
So one's a festival. and I guess the other is, you know, it's a different mindset.
Right. And that's why it's good, like, to have a camera and to have just a mind, because the way my mind works, like, I don't just want to be stuck in just one area in film. Like, the way, you know, I believe my mind is like, I want TV. And pushing the streams, and then have, you know, film as well. Because a lot of real filmmakers that really love what they do, they work on multiple projects, you know, at a time, you know, yeah. Instead of just working on one, like, but like they're working like big, you know, big projects, you know, at once. And so those are my two, you know, like documentary style, you know, those types. And then, reality as well, to kind of, you know, really just push everything, you know, with V-Vision Productions and what we have.
And for those that don't know, Vincent heard me on a podcast and he reached out to me on Instagram.
Oh,
and
man.
He made this amazing, like, you got to check it out. He made his amazing short film on the concept of failure, and he was using my voiceover, which was what was really fascinating about what your process is, because I learned that you said you just had this idea, you know, you heard me on the podcast, an idea came to your mind. And so, yeah, just for those that might not know how artists work, I just want you to explain that process, how you get an idea and how it gets to execution.
Okay, but let me just back up, man. Let me back up. Bro, when I heard you on this podcast, like I listened to it two or three times, and because this was the first time I was being introduced to Tyler Roxon, all right? And I just, like, I was listening to your story and just, like, how you're speaking and, like, you know, all, like, how interesting your life was. And I said, oh, my goodness, this is the guy. You know, I was looking to do a project, but I wasn't sure, you know, what kind of project I was going to do. I wanted something motivational. And the thing was, like, I wasn't even looking. I wasn't looking just yet for a subject. Right. And then I heard you. And then, like, all these, like, as soon as, like, I heard you speak, I heard the way your voice was, I heard the cadence in your voice. And then I said, oh, what does this guy look like? Let me go look him up. And then I said, okay, bam, bam, just like that. And then that's when my mind, like, my creative mind started working and just said, man, like you have everything that we need for this project. So, like, as an artist, you know, I said, all right, let me contact him and just see if he'll respond first. Like, just to see off the bat. And then I contacted you maybe like a week or something. Then you responded. I said, oh, good. You responded good. You know, I was so happy. And then we started talking about it. I said, okay, let me email you this pitch and, you know, see if you like it and I'll see how it goes. And then I took a little while, typed everything up, and then I shot it to your email. And then you liked it, you know, and then we coordinated when we were going to do it. You know, it took a couple months or whatever to get you out to Long Island. And then we made it happen, you know, so the whole concept was just, you know, listening, you know. So as a producer, you know, I had to listen to like every little detail of this entire project. And it started from, you know, I think it was a Millionaire Mindcast.
I think
that's what it was. Is that what it was?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and so that's, you know, that's really where it started. And like I said, as an artist, like I just, like just listening to you, I'm painting the picture of like the different scenes. And of course, you know, some things will change, but just getting the picture in my head of like how I want the film to look, how I want it to sound, you know, how, you know, what I want to go. And the name changed like 3 or 4 times, you know.
Yeah.
You remember that?
I remember that. Yeah.
And changing that, I put a poster up and took it down. And had to, you know, so I was like, and then I finally found the right one, and then we agreed on it, and then made it happen. So that's really, you know, that's really what, I don't know if I answered your question, but I was just so excited about saying how I found who Tyler Roxton was. You know,
well, no, I didn't even want, no, because I really wanted to be about you, because you did answer the question, but I love the creative aspect of that, because so. I'm a poet and I'm a writer. And a lot of times when I'm listening or watching or I'm walking down the street.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I have, or you know, I hear a word from someone, or I watch something, or I see like sun, and I get an idea, and I always have my idea. And I just start writing, right? And,
okay.
and that's the concept. And I have like the end goal and all that. And
that's so interesting.
So it's different for different artists. I have talked to other people who it's a different process. They have to be in a certain state of mind. So it was fascinating for me when you said that something came to you from listening to me on a podcast.
Yes.
And I want to show people that are out there in the audience that it really, just like you said, it you should honor your curiosity and your ideas, because I think a lot of times when I talk to people, there are many hidden artists within us. And, you know, if you don't execute or if you don't try, you're not going to grow. And so it was something that I, you know, I kind of wanted you to share.
That's interesting. Yeah, no, I mean, it's about you too. Hold on. So I have a question for you. I don't mean to turn it around, but this is
sure.
This is interesting. All right. So like you hear something, because this happens to me in film. So you said as a writer, right?
Yeah.
You can see something, hear something, feel something or whatever. And then you automatically kind of like paint it in your head. You have the end goal of like what it looks like just by anything that you, so let's say you see maybe the sunset or something, and the way like a tree looks like behind the sun, you could get something from that and get inspiration.
Yeah. So I'll give you an example. So I have a poem called Success in Skyscrapers, and I was walking down the street in New York City, and I just saw the skyscrapers. And for some reason, I was just like, oh man, all these skyscrapers, I wonder how they were formed. And I was like, I wonder what's the mechanics of that. So how did they get to that tall? And I was like, that reminds me of success. And then I was like, SS, Success in Skyscrapers. And I just put the title down. And then I was like, let me do some research onto how this becomes. And then I was also simultaneously thinking about success. And then the analogy came to my mind. And then another time, I was just watching, I think Madam Secretary was a show on CBS. And and they had said a comment about, I think, immigration. And I was thinking about my experience. And I just wrote down a word, and then I rhymed the word, and then I just kept, you know, it's just one of those weird spaces. Happens in movies a lot, though, you know, especially too. So, I'm different, though. I've talked to people, and it's, you know, I know when you go to a lot of events, you don't want to have your phone out, so I'm always mindful of that, but I get even more inspired when I'm, like, at other creative events, because I'm looking at what they're doing and I'm like,
I can identify with that, you know, in film, because I do the same thing. I can see something And like, for example, I did like a remake, not like a remake, but I just did like a test project with my son last summer. And I had a guy, he did like this remake to the Stranger Things music soundtrack. And I just put a test project together. I saw some guys playing soccer and I said, oh, what if I did this and that and shot this and then flipped it upside down and then made this. And so just seeing random things gives like inspiration, and then have to put it on film. Like I have to put it out there.
Yeah, you know, honor your creativity.
So, exactly. Yeah.
Wow. This is good, and this is why I'm excited for you, for what you're gonna do with your career, because I love the way you capture raw emotion, and that's just very interesting. It's a skill set to have. I watch a lot of movies. I go to many movies, maybe at least 2 to 3 a week. Okay. And I'm always looking. It's a skill I wish I had. Trust me, my brother has it. You have it, so yeah. I'm always admiring you off from afar. But the way you say, "Oh no, well, don't worry. It doesn't look like this now, but it's gonna look like this in the future." Just give me this emotion. Be serious. Right. Be that.
Oh, when we were shooting.
Yeah. And I was just listening to how you were doing that, and then I saw the end result. And I love that stuff because it's a metaphor for a lot of people who are listening to the podcast who are saying, I'm not where I want to be yet, so why even try? Or this looks messed up, or you know, I didn't get the sunlight for my shot, so I must give up. And I think if people applied that concept where, okay, maybe it didn't happen the way they wanted it to happen, or maybe they didn't meet the person or the person didn't respond, maybe they can find someone else and adjust. I think a lot of creative process is a metaphor for lives.
So. Exactly. No, you know, I agree 100%. You know, especially because, like, you know, when you say like creating, like when you're creating something, it's not always going to be like perfect in the beginning. But that's why you create it, to mold it and shape it, you know, exactly what, like how you need it to be. Because like, remember when we were shooting, you, I don't know if you noticed, but it was like a bunch of scenes that we shot that weren't even in that, like the actual film.
Yes.
You know, like it's a bunch of stuff that didn't make the cut just because it didn't look like, even though it looked beautiful, but it you know, in creating it, you know, it just didn't go the way I needed it to go. Yeah. You know, so that's, you know, that's the whole part of it. So if I would have just said, you know, it's not going to work and do that, then, it, you know, it would have had a different, you know, outcome. But yeah, man, you did an amazing job, bro.
It's you. Yeah,
man, you nailed everything. You nailed every emotion. You nailed every, we put you through some hard physical labor, man. You see the stuff that you were doing? You were climbing ropes, you know, lifting these weights and doing all this, man. Yeah. Lifting these dumbbells over your head and holding it there, and then not hearing me say stop, and you were just still holding it up.
Yeah, man. Well, thank you. And for those listening, here's the audio of the documentary.
There's an interesting thing that happens when you're rock bottom, when you're at your lowest point, and that is that the only way is up. I know you're probably feeling down at this moment, and you've lost your job, you've felt like the world is against you, maybe your finances are low, and everyone is basically telling you, I told you so. People around you seem to be doing what it is you want to do. They seem to feel the happiness you want to feel. If we're really thinking about it, Marianne Williamson said it, our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we're powerful beyond measure. It's not our darkness that frightens us, it's our light that frightens us. Your plain small does not serve the world, and has never served anyone. Every time I thought I was being rejected from something good, I was actually being redirected to something better. doesn't matter how slowly you go, as long as you go, but do not stop. No matter what you're doing, do not stop. Perseverance is the hard work you do after you get tired of doing the hard work you already did. Do not give up. Survival can be summed up in three words. Never give up. The idea that you can't do it is a myth, because there's only one of you. And the fact that there's only one of you already puts you at an advantage that no one else has. That advantage is that you, your unique makeup, all the atoms you have, is what ultimately will propel you to whatever success will be. The idea of success is a relative term, but once you end up being the best version of yourself, you've already succeeded. I always say something, and it goes like this: use your difference to make a difference. Because once you understand that your difference is actually your superpower, everything else falls into place. Ultimately, you start to do things the way you want to do things. And the way you want to do things is what is going to get you to your ultimate destination. Whether you realize it or not, people are watching you. And whether you realize it or not, the mindset and the ability for you to achieve perspective of what your failure is teaching you is always on. That applies to business in so many ways, because Amazon wouldn't be formed without failure. Richard Branson and Virgin Enterprise would not be formed without failure. Vera Wang wouldn't be formed without failure. There wouldn't be an Oprah without failure. You know, Oprah Winfrey Studios. And all that they learned was how to find an opportunity to grow. If you're experiencing failure, what is it that you need to do to be better and to deviate? Do you need to change an environment that you're in right now? Do you need to surround yourself around better mentors? Do you need to read more books? Do you need to watch more films, more documentaries? Do you need to practice more? Do you need to get back in the gym? All these things are things you need to do, but you have to start by reframing your failure as a moment of opportunity for you. And because if you're able to do that, then you are able to have the intangibles to be a great entrepreneur and a great business individual, because that is ultimately what entrepreneurship is. It is solving problems, and it's not running away when the first sight of trouble comes. It's always impossible until it's done. And remember, the word impossible literally says, I'm possible.
So you just heard what Vincent created, and if you want to watch it, I have the link in the show notes. But I'm sure some of you at this point are wondering, how can I work with Vincent? Where can I find out more? Or how can I learn more about filmmaking? What would you tell those people, Vincent?
Yes. If you go on Facebook, you can just type in V-Vision Productions. That's V-Vision. And then you can see a lot of that's my production page. And you can see a lot of the stuff we have going on, some behind-the-scenes shots, projects that I had before, future projects that are coming up. I have some really amazing stuff coming up this year. And then on Instagram, you can type in 47 Actual, one word. You'll see my stuff there. A lot of stuff I have going on as well. So, you know, it's some interesting. Hopefully you can check it out. But that's it. V-Vision Productions. And 47 Actual, which is a military term, by the way. I don't know if you know.
No, I didn't. I didn't. Well, now I do.
Yeah, 47 was my number all throughout the military, so I just kept it. And Actual is like a radio term when you're like in wartime, so it's kind of like awesome. A low key thing. Yeah,
that's awesome. That's awesome. Okay, nice. But I'll definitely make sure those are in the show notes. But okay. one thing I've always been impressed by with your career is not with your life. Period is. Your wife, is she Dominican, right?
Yes, she's from Santo Domingo.
Yes, Santo Republic. Domingo. And you said she didn't speak English when you met?
No, she knew. She knew a few words. I'll give her that. You know, she knew a few words. But I speak Spanish. She was my mom's hairdresser, actually. My mom communicated with, like, you know, hand gestures and little words here and there. And I got back from Korea, my mom, from Afghanistan. My mom introduced us and, you know, I spit my Spanish game to her, and she liked it, and then you know, one thing led to another.
So you knew Spanish before her? I thought you knew Spanish after her.
No, I knew Spanish in high school, man. I actually studied it really hard. Wow. I studied it hard in high school. And then out of high school in the military, I would study by myself and like really go hard and learned it. And then, you know, I can read, write and speak it, you know, and then that helped me land a Spanish wife, you know.
You said helped you land a Spanish wife.
Yes.
So I'm, the reason why I'm asking this is I love learning languages. People learning languages is one of the best ways to connect across cultures.
Oh, absolutely.
And do you have any tips that you can share for people who are aspiring to be language learners or linguists?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, really just don't give up, because it's very intimidating to learn something other than your primary language, you know, and then a certain way you have to say a certain word can just, you know, frustrate you. You're not getting it. You know, you just have to keep, you know, trying, keep endeavoring, you know. Something that I that really helped me was I would read like Spanish phrases and I would record myself saying it for, you know, like paragraphs. And then I would just listen throughout the day and then memorize it. And then I would just memorize a whole bunch of them. And then pretty soon I can pull something from this paragraph and put it with that one and mix it up. And before you know it, you know, you're sounding like a pro, you know. So just find creative ways. Like if you're frustrated or it's hard for you to learn, you know, just find a creative way or a way that you know that you can learn, that helps you learn, whether it's visual, whether it's audio, to help you get there, and just don't give up. You know, I tell people, don't give up at all in anything that you do.
Yeah, and it sounds like I'm hearing consistency. And I think also knowing your learning style, you know, I'm someone that's visual, so if I like watching movies, I'm always looking, okay, can I watch it in Spanish subtitle, and can I change the settings of my phone, because I did that as well. You know, all these, incorporate into your daily everyday life, where you start to normalize some of these words and you have do a word of the day, and gradually, you know, it becomes
pick it up. Hold on real quick, man. Just backing up again. I saw a post or something the other day, somebody posted, and it looked like they were speaking French to you. You don't speak French, do you?
We should pas français. Je pas français.
Bro, you better get out of here, man. What? You speak French?
Yeah. It's the same thing you did. I grew up in a French-speaking country when I was in middle school. So from sixth grade to ninth grade. And then I didn't want to lose it, so I kept practicing. And
wow.
I
stopped
school. So, yeah, I do speak French. Wow, where did you even see my French?
Bro, no, because, yeah, you know, I mean, I'm always investigating stuff. I mean, I saw something and somebody commented on one of your photos. And I said, wait, that's not English. And then you responded back to him in some language, and I said, that looks like French. Does he speak French? And I meant to ask you, but yeah, that's impressive, man.
No,
that's
do. Well, thank you. Yeah. I'm fast that you're far too kind. But yeah, I brought it up because I think, you know, one of my goals is to impact the lives of 3 billion people
in
the world. And
that's amazing.
Oh, thank you. It's a very lofty goal, but there are 3 billion people under 30 right now. And I always think about ways you can do that. Like, I think if you get French, you know, that you can get parts of Europe and Africa, so French and English, and North American. And I'm just very, very basic. I'm like slightly conversational Spanish. I need to improve. Then you can get Latin America. And then if I can get, you know, an Asian language, you know, then you start to do that. But that's one of the ways where I want to do that. And I want to be able to deliver content in like multiple languages. But it's a long, long term goal. I'll be working on this well into my 50s.
But you're working on it.
Yes.
That's noble, man. Well, if you need help in the Latin America, give me a call, man. We'll make something happen.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Yeah. I appreciate that. I want to ask you this, where you we're in this age where a lot of people are seeking role models. A lot of youth are seeking role models. What would you say, your father, and what do you think about when you look at the next generation of leaders, especially creatives? What would you, I guess, give as pieces of advice to aspiring creatives, filmmakers, and people who really want to use their content to make an impact?
I say be very careful, because using film can be very good and it can also be very dangerous. You know, so, you know, any kind of idea, but I mean, you still like need to be yourself, right? So any kind of way, you know, that you want to impact the world, I say go at it you know, 100%. My dad, you know, he's not a filmmaker, right? He's not in the industry. He's a pastor, actually, in Long Island. But, you know, just the, like, the principles and just the discipline that, you know, he instilled in me and things that he shows me even to this day, you know, I'm able to apply in the filmmaking industry, you know, it, being able to impact the world because, making film content, making anything that's visual that people can see, you know, every year just gets more and more, more popular and more in demand. You know, so if you're creating things where it can actually change people's lives, if you change things where it can hijack people's emotions, it needs to be something to where you can actually, you know, do good. You know, so if somebody's having a horrible day or they're on the brink of suicide or something, like, they should be able to watch something that you have geared toward what they need and really motivate them, really bring them out of a dark time. You know, we shot Failure, and, you know, it's so many different emotions that could go into that. The audience for that, you know, is so, you know, so huge, you know, because of, you know, whether they're failing in their marriage, they're failing in their life, they're failing in even like high school, or they're failing in their school, like test grades, you know, it's so many, you know, different things or, you know, that can tie into that. You know, so, you know, it just, you know, making film, making anything visual just has, you know, mentally can take over your entire mind, can take over your entire brain, can take over your thoughts, can take over your actions, you know. So to filmmakers, you know, that are looking, you know, to make content, you know, make something that's really worth, you know, meaning, you know. And of course, there's entertainment where you're just going to, you know, you have, you know, comedy and everything and horror and what have you. But, you know, every bit of content is something that somebody's going to look and really break down, and it goes directly to their brain. You know, so if you're in somebody's brain with your camera, you have to know what you're doing, you know, and just really go do it from the heart, you know, exactly right from the heart. Yeah.
So have a strong value system and really don't take your influence for granted, I think is what you're saying.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. 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 Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You can't. Yeah, like I said, it could be very dangerous, and, you know, you don't ever want to underestimate it, you know, just because if you're making a film that you think nobody's going to see, you know, you really just need one person to see it to change their life. You know, I would have been happy if one person saw, you know, the film that we shot and really impacted their life, and just that one person, you know, the whole film would have been a success, you know, for me, just to hear it from one person. I mean, I thank God that, you know, we have over 40,000 views and a lot of people have been, you know, talking, but, you know, just one person is really all like a filmmaker needs to hear to say, hey, man, this is really good. This helped me with this part of my life. And, you know, thank you. Yeah.
I love that. No, I love that. I think too many people in positions of power don't understand that. And that's been my biggest frustration with a lot of that, where there are people that would say, I'm not a role model. And I'm always saying people are still watching you. Whether you know, mm-hmm. So if you're in a public eye and you have a circle of influence, it's very important that you understand what you're doing, right. You know, whether you wanted to or not. So
exactly. Eyes are always watching.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who are your favorite directors?
Oh, man, good question. You know, my style is a lot different than a lot of them because I don't do scripted. You know, I do like unscripted documentary reality. So, you know, it's different. But I do like Spike Lee. I love the way that Spike Lee moves. I like his cores. I like his values, the way he shoots, you know, his 40 Acres and the Mule, his company, and just how independent, the way he goes about things. I really like his concept of filmmaking. I really like that. And I'd say Scorsese, just because of the same fundamentals in the way that they shoot film and like the old school way of really, because I never went to film school ever in my life.
Right.
So like I never even took a class. I just learned, you know, from God given, you know, ability and school of YouTube, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, just seeing what I've learned from that, you know, those two really, I like the way they move in the film industry.
Yeah, I know Scorsese is up there for me as well.
Yeah. Will Packer, I'm sorry. Will Packer too.
Yeah, well, Will Packer's doing a lot of production, right? So a lot of what you're doing. Yeah.
Yes. Will Power Packer. Yeah. He's working on, he has a reality show coming out too. that you know looks real good.
Yeah, well, I love that. Well, let's wrap it up here with this question, yep. which is my mission statement. Now, my mission statement is use your difference to make a difference.
Absolutely.
And I always ask a lot of my guests the same question. So how do you use your difference to make a difference, Vincent?
I use my difference to make a difference in really impacting the thought process of who I'm trying to reach out to. So, meaning, my thing is making films, making visual content. And I want to use that to really motivate, to really inspire, to really bring an emotion that somebody can just kind of sit down and just like let all their problems go, look at it and feel really good about it. Whether I'm shooting a faith-based film about a missionary, or whether I'm shooting a motivational type, or whether I'm shooting an entertainment, reality, type, I want to be able to, make a difference by really making somebody feel inspired, feel like if they're going to give up, they need to watch this. And then, wow, they just have a second wind, that they're ready to go. So really just, I want to use my difference to make a difference in a way where I can really hijack your mind to maybe think a way that you haven't thought before for the better.
Yeah. Well, I love it. Watch out for Vincent Williams.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Maker of the future.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much, man.
No, the pleasure is mine. Thank you so much for coming on. Ladies and gentlemen, till next time, use your difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.